This is Dr. Rob Harder with the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast, making your world better. What does it take to be an effective nonprofit leader today? What are the biggest challenges? What are the biggest obstacles? How should nonprofits fundraise in an economy that is constantly changing? All of these reasons combined led me to start this show. And it's my hope that through this series, people can learn not only what it takes to be an effective nonprofit organization, but to hear from effective leaders who are successfully making a positive impact in their communities. We hope you enjoy the show, as together we hear how they are making their world better. Hello, podcast listeners. Thanks so much for tuning in today. So I wanted to start out by letting you know, I do have a YouTube page now for the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. So perhaps you've been listening mostly just through audio only and Spotify or iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Well, all the same great content is on our YouTube page, Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. Plus, we have a lot of additional videos on our YouTube page. So I encourage you to check it out. Just go to YouTube and type in Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. In fact, we encourage you to subscribe. That way you keep up to date with all the different great content every time we update a new video onto our page. So again, check it out. YouTube, Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. I'd love to have you there. And thanks even more if you want to subscribe. All right, today's topic, volunteers. So volunteers are the lifeblood of nonprofits, right? And I think even more so than just fundraising as a whole, because volunteers will both help you accomplish your mission, and they most often become donors or already donors who will actually financially support your mission. So with that as our premise, how do we as nonprofit leaders recruit volunteers more effectively? How can we turn volunteers into recruiters who in turn not only recruit volunteers, but they recruit new donors to your organization? How do we maximize the impact of our volunteers? Well, this and many other questions I ask of Tyler Manley, who is my guest on today's show. Tyler is the Vice President for Growth and Engagement at Catch a Fire. Catch a Fire is an organization that aims to bring together philanthropy and employee engagement through creating and tracking volunteer opportunities with immediate impact that simultaneously supports your nonprofit. So if you're seeking to improve the recruitment and retention of your volunteers, you don't want to miss today's episode. Enjoy today's show. This podcast is sponsored by DonorBox. DonorBox, helping you help others with the best donation forms in the business. Well, welcome to the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. I have Tyler Manley on the show. Tyler, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob. I'm excited.
Absolutely. Well, you know, there's no doubt about it. Volunteers are the lifeblood of any nonprofit. In fact, I've had a lot of people talk about fundraising, which of course is also, you could maybe consider that the lifeblood, but I feel like volunteers perhaps even more so, because not only do they help you accomplish your mission, they're often your donors as well. So they kind of do both things of supporting it financially, but also supporting the mission itself. So as you want to engage the community, as any nonprofit does, the more volunteers you have, you have a bigger impact, right? You want more volunteers as part of that process. So today I want to ask you a series of questions on how we as nonprofit leaders, which as far as I can tell from my listener base, most of my listeners are nonprofit leaders themselves, are being paid to lead a nonprofit organization, whether that be executive director role, director of development role. So how can we really optimize our ability to recruit, to retain, and empower volunteers to help move our organizations further faster? So first, how can leaders best increase volunteer engagement and participation within their own volunteer base from your experience?
Man, it's a huge question, Rob. I'll say like one thing before we jump into it too, and I'll just mention like, I know that people who are listening, right, are probably coming from very different sized organizations, very different cause areas all over the world. And so some things, you know, I think that when we think about volunteering, like at Catch a Fire, for example, we have 100,000 volunteers in our community. The things that we do are very different, right, than other smaller orgs. And so, you know, I think as we talk about it too, there are things that people can take with them, right? There may be things that don't make sense. But one thing I would say too is that you don't need to do everything, right? As with most things at nonprofits, you don't have to do everything, everybody. Yeah. Like, less is more. I think when we think about increasing volunteer engagement across the board, right? If you already have a pool of volunteers that you're working with, one place I always want to start with an organization is helping them understand and identify, like, why do their volunteers volunteer with them? Right. And that seems really obvious, but I think there are many organizations that just don't even ask. Like, they don't ask the question. And understanding that is going to understand how you can make your program a lot better, how you can engage more volunteers, how you can grow that volunteer community as you go. Right. So really understanding that, I always love like surveying volunteers, right? And not just when they come on, but you know, what we do, for example, in our community is we survey them at the beginning, right, when they come on. We do one large volunteer survey that has a lot of questions every year. And then every quarter, we do like a pulse survey. It has little things that have things changed, so kind of what are they doing? Because that's going to lead you to kind of things that will help strengthen your volunteer pool. That being said, right, once you kind of identify those things, there's three kind of general rules I always recommend to organizations, which is one is around making sure that you have a really kind of established recognition process for your volunteers, right? Understand like what they actually need. And when I ask executive directors this, like, oh, how do you recognize volunteers? They're always like, oh yeah, we do that. And then I'll be like, okay, so what do you do? They're like, oh, we write them a thank you letter every time, right? And that's very nice, right? It's nice to get thank you letters. I'm sure people love to get those. But again, really asking volunteers how they would like to be recognized can be really powerful because, you know, as an example, right? At Catch a Fire, when a volunteer connects with an organization and that project is complete, we create like this beautiful social graphic they can share out to their community, right?
Oh, nice.
And, you know, and every volunteering has a little bit, I don't mean this in a bad way, but it has a little sprinkle of vanity in it, right? And it's actually a good thing, right? It means that people want to brag about what they've done. You want to brag about what they donate to. It's good for your organization to get that publicity. And so we want to make sure they can share it out, right? They can share out what they did, what the organization said about them on their project, all those things, right? And we asked people what they wanted, and that is what they wanted, right? But recognition could look a lot of different ways too. Like I was in AmeriCorps many years ago, and we would do AmeriCorps projects, and I remember we would volunteer at Habitat for Humanity, and everyone would have different colored t-shirts, right? Where if you were new to volunteering, you'd get a blue t-shirt. And once you donated like 50 hours, you got an orange t-shirt. And when you were at 150, you got a purple t-shirt. And it sounds so silly. Like, it's kind of stupid. Like, it's the same t-shirt, just has the same logo on it, just a different color. But right. People loved that. They loved the idea of coming back and like coming for their t-shirt, getting their things, right? So thinking about little things like that that you can bolster, but also just asking folks what they want. Would they be helpful if you were to write them a recognition, a letter for them or things like that, like a reference or something like that. So, you know, milestone celebrations, recognition, I think that's really important. The second thing I think is thinking about ways that you can give back to your volunteers, right?
Okay. Yep.
So the warm and fuzzies will only take you so far. And there are people who just want to volunteer because it feels good in their tummies. And that's really nice. Right. But honestly, like, you should be thinking about value that you can generate for your volunteers too. So are there things that you can develop, like in terms of skills, right? Some organizations, maybe you have programs where you're having folks, you know, volunteer to like go into homes of people who are bedridden, right? And spend time with them, right? And maybe they're learning skills about a healthcare job they could take going forward. Or maybe you offer trainings at your organization specifically for volunteers, or you kind of make it an equivalence kind of thing. So for example, I worked in food justice many years before I worked here at Catch a Fire, and we had an urban farm, right? We had an aquaponics farm in the west side of Buffalo. There's like 16 city lots. And so we would do trainings. It was a revenue stream for us. We would do aquaponics trainings to people. And a lot of folks really wanted to come into those trainings, but they couldn't afford them. I mean, it was expensive. Aquaponics, we would do a multi-day conference kind of thing. So we would always make an equivalent where we would say, look, it's this much money, or you can donate, you know, 60 hours, right, on the farm on weekends or something. Always making a way for volunteers to kind of accrue time, like the time they give it has value, right? Whether it unlocks special volunteer events that they're coming to, maybe unlocks special trainings, or it's an actual equivalent they can use at your organization for something else. So I think that's really important. Like, thinking about ways that you can give back to your volunteers as well. It's not monetary, obviously.
Well, building off those three factors that you just shared about, you know, another focus area to improve both recruiting and retention is regards to what type of volunteer programs we offer. So my question to you would be, should organizations consider different volunteer structures such as formal versus non-formal or project-based programs in order to really tailor the recruitment efforts? Maybe talk about recruitment a bit on that level.
Yes. So there's a lot of different ways to volunteer. Again, depending on your organization, your cause, it can be very specific. The way I like to think about it, it's like there's three big buckets, right? And there's, you know, a ton of little buckets off of each of these. But the big three, right? Hands and hearts volunteering. That's like any in-person, you know, American Cancer Society, coming to the rally, coming to an event, you know, at a shelter. And there's programmatic volunteering. And that's more like you're having folks come in and do tutoring with kids, right? Or you're having people come run a summer camp or something.
Right. Right?
They're delivering the programming that you're doing in an organization. And then there's skills-based volunteering, right? Which is what I have dedicated most of my life to, right? And this is where a professional is coming in with professional skills to donate their unique skills to you. That could be someone building a website for you from scratch. It could be, you know, someone helping with financial forecasting or your accounting or legal help, things like that, right? The first two, Hands and Hearts and Programmatic, again, I think are going to be cause specific. So there are organizations like environmental causes are baked in, right? Hands and Hearts. You're going to be at cleanups. You're going to be on the ground at camping trips, whatever it is, helping out. I personally think that, you know, depending on what you're doing, you should probably have some sort of volunteering program for each of these things. Although programmatic tends to be specific, right? If you perform surgeries or dentistry or something at your nonprofit, you probably don't want random people coming out the street doing dentistry, right? So right. Programmatic volunteering could make sense. But the one I think that everybody should do, right, is skills-based volunteering. And I don't say that, obviously I'm biased because that's what I focus on, but I focus on it because I'm biased towards it, right? That to me is like letting people in to support you on graphic design or writing blogs for you or writing emails, whatever it is so valuable and so huge to do. Yep. And so when you think about like which ones you need, focus on like, what do you have the capacity to take on in terms of volunteer management? Yeah. And then think about like, what are the actual needs that you do? And you don't have to do everything at once either, right? Yeah. When you start thinking about the kinds of volunteer programs you want to start and begin, just do a couple at a time. Bring on two or three volunteers at a time, right? Because you're going to learn a lot in those small doses, right? Having a test and learn culture at your organization, I think is so valuable. Test it, try it, see how it goes, and then it can build from there. And if it doesn't work, kill it,
yeah,
right? Exactly. That's okay. One of the hardest things we do at nonprofits is we love adding new things and doing new things. We hate getting rid of programs that don't work. It is just as valuable, right? So, testing it out, trying it. But I think for those three buckets, like skills-based for everybody, for sure. Hands and Hearts, I think there was something magical about people meeting in person and doing labor. It's also, I think, more inclusive because anyone can usually come and do that. And I think, again, programmatic volunteering is going to be specific to the work that you're doing.
Well said on that. You know, volunteers, no doubt about it, save organizations money, right? That's the period. I mean, that's one of the big reasons why you have volunteers for a nonprofit. If you're really trying to maximize your budget and be a good steward of the funds you do have lots of volunteers because that really does save money. In fact, there's a study, according to Independent Sector Study, volunteers are worth over $28 an hour on average. Now, the question is, how many volunteers do we need, right? And what kind of volunteers do we need? Do they need to be trained in certain areas or do they need certain time commitments that is consistent, say, every week? So how best can an organization assess how many and how often they need volunteers? Maybe you could speak to that.
So the first thing you said, that volunteers save organizations money, period. I completely agree with that. They absolutely do, right? But one stipulation I'd add to that that's really important for us all to understand as nonprofits is volunteers are not free. Right? They do not cost money, but they do cost time. And your time is incredibly valuable. I would argue that it's more valuable than money because you can always raise more money. You cannot raise more time. There's only so much that you can do. And so when you're thinking about value added from volunteers, there is a point of no return there, right? Where it's like, actually, it's negative value to you. If you have too many that you can't manage, you're doing not a good job with it, right? Something that we do, so you know, we focus again on primarily on skills-based volunteering. Every time we match a volunteer with an organization, we scope out exactly like not just what the product is and what it will look like and all these things. We have a very specific part where we talk about how much time on the nonprofit's end they will spend managing that project.
Okay.
That's the number one number you should be thinking about is what capacity do you have? Because if you're a one-woman show running a nonprofit and I sent you 200 volunteers tomorrow, like, would you have 200x value? Like, no, you'd be probably like, what do I do with all these people? This is chaos, right?
Yep.
So thinking about what you can handle and take on. Again, the testing and learning is going to be huge. You're never going to run into trouble by having too little volunteers. I think you'll run into trouble by having too many. So like, again, keeping projects small, adding a couple at a time, seeing how it works out, seeing its value, and then keep doing that until you feel like it's more work to manage the volunteers than do the thing yourself. And when you hit that point, you're probably gone too far, right? And again, depending on your organization, like identify what are the gaps and needs, right? Like on my urban farm, right? It was really nice to have volunteers come and help us move compost, right? Sure. We only had a 4-person staff, so it was nice to have that, right? But when it came to things like strategic planning, like we actually had an incredible executive director who really knew her stuff. We had a very engaged board, which cross our fingers, we were very lucky to have. Not everyone has that.
Right.
And so we didn't need support there, right? So one thing you can do is like, if you've ever had a SWOT analysis, right? Of like strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats to your organization, that's a great time to identify what are things that we can bring in volunteers to do. Again, not hitting a threshold where it's less helpful than helpful, and then kind of thinking it from there. But again, the biggest thing is testing and learning, right? Try things out, test it. If it doesn't work, it's okay. You didn't fail, right? Sure. Everything's going to be a little bit different and need different needs. But those are the big things. Remember your own capacity because you only have so many hours in the day.
Well, I definitely have found on top of what you just shared, to have clearly defined roles and responsibilities that you expect from volunteers is really pretty important. So in your mind, how important is it to do something like, say, volunteers should read and sign a volunteer agreement? Like how rigid maybe it would be a good term, or how intentional should we be to actually formulate this process of having volunteers say, hey, I'm committing to this and I'm going to sign on that?
Yes. Okay. Great question. There's two different things here, right? The one about clearly defined roles and responsibilities. That is so crucial. If you're bringing in volunteers in any capacity, even what we mentioned, programmatic or hands and hearts, whatever it is, write a job description for it.
Yeah.
Like you should be able to articulate exactly what the role is, what it is not, yeah, and what it will look like when it's done, right? Yeah. It is really important that everybody knows exactly what's expected of them and what you know what to expect from a volunteer when they come on. Yeah. And sometimes organizations are afraid to do this because they don't, like, they're like, oh, this person's working for free, so I don't want to, you know, well, you can do whatever you want. Like, no, you need them to be helpful and they want to be helpful, right? So make sure that you're meeting the expectation on both ends, right? We always do that with all of our projects. Regarding the, so yes, very clearly stated roles and responsibilities. It also allows you, as you're testing and learning, right, you may realize, like, we do an event on Saturday, that was a little too much responsibility, right? So maybe I'll take this off. Or, you know what? There was a lot of downtime. I can add these things, right? You're able to tweak it in a systematic way. In terms of a volunteer agreement, yes, I always recommend that. And there's a lot of reasons. The big reason to me is it makes firing a volunteer much easier, right?
Yeah.
And that's like, people don't want to think about that. We want to think about the negative, whatever. But it's true that, like, sometimes a volunteer is not helpful to you, right? It's just not helpful as you're doing it. And so let's say you don't have terms, right? Let's say you have a group of people that show up every Saturday and they're really awesome or they're doing whatever. And then two people show up and they are messing around. They're jerks. They're rude to the staff. They're rude to the folks that you're serving, whatever it is, right?
Right.
If you don't have any, they didn't sign anything. Now you have to have a conversation like this. Hey, yeah, I just feel like you should go, right? You know, because it's you now. You're like, I just think, you know, this isn't working out, right? And they're like, well, why? And you're like, well, something you're defensive. It's a weird interaction you have to have. Yep, whereas an agreement that you have is very simple, right? Hey, when you came here, you signed an agreement that you would do this and this. This did not happen. So we have a zero tolerance policy. Thanks for coming by, but we're all good, right? It's like on our site, right? We have a terms of service people sign when they come on. Because, you know, if a volunteer like is rude to an organization, like mean to an organization, or vice versa, it happens too, where they're mean to a volunteer.
Right.
I can't be like, hey, I just felt like that was mean. So I think we're just, you know, I had to be like, hey, look, here are our terms of service. Here's the evidence here.
Yeah.
We're going to limit your account, right? So always protect yourself with that, right? A good idea, honestly, too, is if you build a community with your volunteers, again, whether it's virtual or in person, have the community of volunteers create their own community agreements, right? They can create that because then they'll police each other, right? Yeah. And they'll be like, no, hey, like that's not okay or that's not all right. It's not you who's doing it. It's right. The community agreements that you went around. So yes, always that. And again, I think it's all about creating buy-in and having someone come in, like having someone interview for a volunteer role, being selected from a pool of candidates, signing something, it feels very legit. And the more legit, not that it's not legit, but you can make it feel like you're held accountable for something. They feel like they're going to show up when you ask them to because they went through this process. That buy-in is so important because it creates something where they feel, again, accountable to show up, accountable to follow the rules of being the volunteer. And again, they're going to like that a lot better too.
Yeah. One thing when it comes to volunteers, I've seen is how volunteers can sometimes be your best recruiters for both more volunteers, but also donors. And so maybe you could speak to how we as nonprofit leaders can help coach volunteers to be better recruiters.
Oh man, I'm so glad you asked this because
this
is what I preach all the time. We're like, it's the same. So I did a lot of donor relations work, right? And fundraising before I worked here.
Yep.
And you know, the old sentiment, right, is like the donation is the beginning of the relationship.
Right.
It's not the end. That's why thank you letters are like, thank you so much. Like it should be like, here's now what you can do, right? Yes. Volunteering is the same way. It is the beginning of the relationship. Like one very practical thing you can do is always have a toolkit. And when I say toolkit, people get freaked out. Like, oh God, I don't have time to create a toolkit. Like it's so simple, right? If someone volunteers with you, if it's a person, have a little folder or have an email that you send that has a Google Drive with like three things in it. It has like an elevator pitch of your organization, ways they can get more involved or ways they can donate or a calendar of events that are coming up. Super simple. You can add things, stories, whatever you want to do, but have something that they get and that they can choose. And some people will just want to volunteer the one time and not come back. That happens, right?
Yep.
Fail them or something. What you're doing is creating the opportunity for someone to become a super volunteer or become a super donor, right? And you have to kind of plant the seeds, right? To harvest it. So I can't recommend that enough. And you mentioned before, like volunteers are the lifeblood of your organization.
Right.
To me, I think about it as networks. Your network is your lifeblood as an organization. The more people that you know is the more opportunities that are out there, right? Any person who is volunteering with you hangs out with people that would donate money to you. That's just a fact, right? Not everyone's out there volunteering with, you know, an organization for like youth education. They probably have friends and family that care about that too, right? Because they have a culture that has made them want to do that. And so you should be tapping into them, especially with skills-based volunteers or anyone, right? If they're professionals, giving them a toolkit to give to their companies, right? A lot of corporations have corporate matching. A lot of companies are asking their staff, hey, what organizations are you interested in that we can give money to this year?
Right.
You can get a $10,000 check in the mail just because you sent a little toolkit to someone who volunteered with you one time.
Right.
So make sure that you're building that relationship, right? You know, we've had volunteers become donors or advocates or sometimes board members, right?
Yeah.
It's a perfect opportunity. These are people who are passionate about your cause. They have disposable income and they're interested in the work that you do. They are your donors, right?
Right.
So make sure that you're putting them on that list because sometimes organizations are afraid to ask volunteers for money. Because like, well, they've already done so much, but that is a huge mistake. The way you should frame it is, hey, look, we're doing a donation right now. Like, we would love for you to fundraise for us, right? And send this link out to your friends. If they want to donate, they can, but they don't feel like you're asking them for money. They're asking your network for money, right? Sharing it on social media, spreading it out. So yeah, it is anyone who touches your organization is a potential donor, connection to a donor, connection to a large grant that you didn't have access to before, getting in rooms you wouldn't be able to avail it to. So definitely, yes.
We'll be right back. Are you looking for an easy and effective way to boost your nonprofit's donations? Look no further than DonorBox, the online fundraising platform that streamlines your fundraising efforts, maximizes donations, and simplifies giving for your supporters. With DonorBox, you can create beautiful donation forms, accept digital wallet payments, track donations, and send auto receipts. And the best part? There are no setup or monthly fees and no long-term contracts required. So what are you waiting for? Visit DonorBox.org today to get started. That is DonorBox.org. Hey, friends, and thanks so much for listening to the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. I want to let you know that I've recently become a professional certified coach. You know, with my nearly 30 years of nonprofit experience, I know firsthand how hard you work as a leader. I also know how important it is to have someone you can call on to get help with the barriers, the leadership challenges that you will face both professionally and personally. And I really want people to thrive, to become all they were meant to become by providing coaching and consulting services. So if coaching is something you've always been interested in, but maybe weren't quite sure what it was all about, I encourage you to reach out. You can go to my website, robharder.com, or just email me at rob@robharder.com. I would be happy to provide a free sample coaching session so you can determine if coaching is for you. All right, thanks again for tuning in. Now back to the show. Well, good. Well, let's move on to pitfalls. What do you feel like are the biggest pitfalls you've seen that really prevent nonprofits from having a robust volunteer program?
I think a couple things. One, I think is, again, like going too big too fast.
Okay.
Thinking that, oh, hey, we really need a new website, right? So I'm going to send out a message to everybody. I'm going to have like 30 people working on this thing, right?
Yeah.
That would just be messy and kind of chaotic. Or again, if it's in person, if it's programmatic, whatever it is, like start small, right? Your staff has jobs doing things, but start small and build from there. One of the biggest mistakes I see orgs make, and it's funny because they suffer from this, but it's a symptom of a larger problem. And they don't really understand what happened. And the biggest thing that they don't do is every project that a volunteer does, whether it is in person, whether it is programmatic, like tutoring, or whether it is skills-based, needs to have an end date. It needs to have a very defined start and finish. This is why. Like, here's an example. Let's say you meet somebody at a conference and they're like, oh, I do social media for this small marketing firm. Perfect. I'd love to do social media. I'll do Facebook posts for your organization. And you're like, oh my God, wonderful, right? Month one, month two, month three, they handle it. They're doing a great job. It's awesome, right? Now you're like, oh my God, I have this person. I'm doing whatever. 4 months in, eventually, they're going to come to you and say, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
And now you're going to be like, oh, okay, you know, all right. And they're like, yeah, sorry. And you're like, no, it's fine. No, thank you. And they're like, yeah, no, I just, something came up. I had a baby or I got promoted or lost my job, whatever it is, right? And you're like, no, it's fine. So suddenly, such an amazing, wonderful thing that happened. What a great relationship ends in a sour way. Always.
Right.
Because it has to end. And now it's awkward and it's bitter and weird, right? It doesn't have to be that way. If you say, hey, look, I'd love for you to commit to doing our social media for like the next 2 months. And they say, yes, I can absolutely commit to that, right? Yeah. At the end of those 2 months, now you get to celebrate. Like, oh my God, like, thank you so much. This was amazing. Yeah. And you're like, oh, I love doing it. She's like, hey, would you like to do the next 2 months? And then I'd be like, you know what? I actually can't because I'm going on it. But this was so great. 2 months later, like maybe I'll come back or let me know like, when it's available, right? Now it's positive. It ended really nicely. Everything is that way. Everything should have an end because what ends up happening, like the skills base or anything, scope creep tends to come in.
Yeah.
Where like, right. I'm going to help you with this thing and they help you. And then you're like, okay, but also could we get this? Could we get that? Could we get that? And then when the volunteer says no to the sixth thing, you're like, oh, okay. I thought you committed to this. But it's like, they've done so much, right?
Right.
And that's so, yeah, having an ending is so crucial. It's such a small thing, but it can save you so much in terms of how people feel about volunteering with you. Yeah. So that's a big one. Again, there's a lot of mistakes there. I think we've already talked about, but you know, making sure that people feel, I don't want to get philosophical, right? But it's about purpose sometimes. Like I've done all kinds of volunteering in my life. And when I was in AmeriCorps, I've painted a lot of fences and I've painted a lot of schools, right?
Yep, sure.
I've been with like 30 people painting walls.
Right.
And I know that if I didn't show up that day, that wall would have still gotten painted. Yeah, maybe 8 minutes slower, right? But like, I'm glad I was there. That was great. But I don't feel like it was a make or break situation.
Yeah.
So making sure that when you're adding volunteer roles and volunteer things, like making sure that people feel like if they weren't there, it wouldn't have happened.
Exactly. Right?
And that's really powerful. There's a lot of different ways to do that, but I think that's really focus on that. What is the purpose? Do people feel like it's Saturday, I know I committed to this thing, but like, someone will pick that fence.
Right.
I'm sleeping in it, right? Making sure you're making people know that they're irreplaceable, that like your organization needs them to be successful, right?
Well,
and sorry, one last thing. I could talk
forever about this.
One thing too is you may do this and not realize it, but again, for each kinds of volunteering, no matter what you're having people do, be careful about separating like staff and volunteers. Like volunteers are part of the team. Like they're part of your team, right? Like something I love to see all the time is organizations' websites that have like a staff page and they have a volunteer page and it has their pictures and bios. Like they feel part of the team. They feel part of your organization.
Boy, that's a really good point.
Let them in. Because one thing that's unique about volunteers too is that you have an opportunity to show people how the sausage is actually made. Right.
True.
Something we do as nonprofits a lot is we are very, and I know why we do it, but we're very careful about our exposing our shortcomings or our gaps or things that we're not good at, right? When you read an annual report, it's like, look at these kids running through a field and they're laughing and there's graphs and numbers going up and everything's so, we did so well. Everything's amazing right now, right?
Yep.
But when you're a volunteer and you come in to see how staff meetings go, people are stressed out. There's no paper in the printer. Like they get to really see how your organization is run and what it needs and what it takes to run it. They're much more likely to feel loyalty to your nonprofit as opposed to loyalty to the cause.
Right.
What happens sometimes is they may volunteer because they want to help pets and dogs.
Sure.
So they come to an event where they pet dogs and they play with them and it's nice. But if you invite them to a staff meeting and they get to hear how things are working and what the budget is, like letting them in, they feel like a part of it. And they're more likely to join your board. They're more likely to donate money because they see everyone's overworked and underpaid. So like letting them in, right? That can be, that's a pitfall that people to do. They keep them at arm's length.
Yeah. Good insights. Well, you've mentioned many times you work for Catch a Fire. Maybe just briefly for my listeners, tell us about your mission real quick. And what does your work look like?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, what does it look like? So Catch a Fire, so we're the largest skills-based volunteer platform in the world. So our mission is to bridge past the stronger communities. The way that we work is that we partner with large like philanthropic foundations and large corporations.
Okay.
And we build skills-based volunteering programs for nonprofits, right?
Okay.
So we connect organizations. Again, we work with tens of thousands of nonprofits all over the world, and we're connecting them with professionals on things like, creating a marketing strategy, designing a visual branding guide for organizations, website design, Salesforce database customization, right? Things that organizations just don't have the resources to do. It's such a unique sector that we work in, right? Where you know, no one starts a nonprofit because they're good at starting nonprofits.
Right.
You start it because you're passionate. There's something in the world you want to extinguish or you want to elevate. Suddenly, you're like the CEO of your own company. And you have to you have to be the expert at marketing and fundraising and management and finance, all these things, HR. Right. You have to know everything. And you just can't, right? And so that's what we do, right? We on our site, we have like pre-scoped out projects, start, finish. There's always an end date. There's always things that, that scoped out. Or you can post those things and match up with volunteers and get them done. The big thing there, right, is there are so many things. And if you're listening to this, right, you know, we're all wearing a lot of hats. My favorite nonprofit euphemism, right? But we're a lot of hats, right?
Right.
And it's funny, I guess, but it's also like, we're all doing way too much. Like, we're all doing things that are not a job description. I was the marketing director, right? Which means I did everything.
Everything, pretty much.
Marketing, fundraising. I wrote grants. I drove around a giant mobile farmer's market to food deserts around the city, right? Because you do. Everyone's doing everything, right? Everything's out there doing stuff. And there's just no worse feeling in the world than when you are like, you don't know how to do something, but it has to be done. So you're YouTubing it. What are you guys going to do? You're Googling it.
Right, exactly.
It's 9 at night. You're like figuring out how to use ActiveCampaign or MailChimp to send a list or whatever. And you know it would take a professional 10 seconds to do it.
That's
but it's
right.
taking you 2 hours. That is soul-sucking work, right? Yeah. The funny thing is that you don't realize that there are millions of professionals all around the world that are actively looking for organizations to get involved with a skill-based volunteering level, right? Because they want to give something that's valuable to them. They want to give something that's unique, right? Like imagine when I'm painting a fence, I'm not a painter.
Right.
It could be anybody, right?
Exactly.
But like how cool is it to donate, to create a logo for a nonprofit?
Right.
Think about the loyalty that's built there. Like this organization, you made their logo. Every time you see it, the t-shirts, the merchandise, you designed it.
That's
so of course you're going to come to their events. Of course you're going to tell your friends, you're going to be, hey, look, I made that, right? You're a part of the team. It's so valuable and powerful. Obviously it saves you money, but again, it creates a relationship that is just so beyond a lot of things you can do. So that is what we do. Catchafire.org. You can check it out. It's all there.
Yeah. Well, just going to ask that. Yeah. So listeners who want to find out more, sounds like catchafire.org. And then for you, if they want to connect with you, maybe personally, what's the best way for my listeners to do that?
Yeah. It's just my name in the website. It's tyler@catchafire.org. So the way that we work, just so you all know, so Catch a Fire. So nonprofits do not pay for Catch a Fire. That is a part of our mission, what we do. It is free to them. But the way that we work is we partner with large foundations and companies and they sponsor memberships to organizations.
So if
you're hear this and you've got an email from your local funder or a company, you have access, get on and start using this. You're missing
got it.
If you don't, if you come to our site, register at the corner, join the waiting list, right? What that does is we'll email you in a couple, it could be a couple days, it could be a couple months. We'll let you know when we add you to a list and you have access forever, right?
Okay.
It's unrestricted. You can post as many things as you want, do what you want to do. We're looking for foundations that are looking for like your cause area or your region, whatever it is. So catchafire.org, check it out. You're there.
Well, again, you're doing great work. And as we started at the very beginning, volunteers are so critical for the success of any nonprofit. So anything we can do to get more help and get an organization like yourself that really provides that support is wonderful. So thanks for how you're helping the nonprofit sector. And thanks for taking time to be on the show today.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. It was really fun. Thanks a lot.
Hey, friends. Well, I wanted you to know that this podcast can be found on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, Google Podcasts, and wherever you listen to other podcasts. I also want to encourage you to like, subscribe, and share this podcast with others. This will actually help us get this great content out to more nonprofit leaders just like you. You can also join the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast community. Find other resources and interviews of past guests all on my website, nonprofitleadershippodcast.org. Well, thanks again for listening. And until next time, keep making your world better. And don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel, the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. Go to YouTube and look up Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. We'll see you there. This podcast is sponsored by DonorBox. DonorBox, helping you help others with the best donation forms in the business.